Hey guys, welcome to Tales from a Butterfly podcast. I'm your host, Taria Shondell. Sometimes caterpillar, sometimes butterfly, but always striving to make it through life's many metamorphoses with my faith intact. With this podcast, I hope to encourage anyone that is going through life situations, no matter what they are, that have left you feeling like you will forever be a caterpillar in the cocooning stage, having to continually shed your skin while fighting to get free from any chains that are holding you back from your transformation. I want to tell you, keep your faith in the transformer, believing that just like the butterfly, when you come out, you will be a thing of beauty who is not afraid to fly. So come on, my butterflies, let's fly. You're listening to episode 43 of the Tales from a Butterfly podcast, titled, When the Silence Ends, Life Can Begin. Angela D. Wharton talks living again after the pain. And I'm your host, Taria Shondell. So let's get into it. So hey guys, thank you so much for tuning into episode 43 with my girlfriend, my sis, my friend, Miss Angela D. Wharton, or Angela Denise Wharton. I have a funny story. I have a cousin named Angela Rozier, and I always text her Angela Denise. Hit the wrong Angela. And it was like, what, 6 o'clock in the morning? And I text, good morning, Angela Denise. And then I realized it was the wrong Angela. And she said, but that's my middle name. So I thought that was hilarious. But I'm so excited to have her on the podcast. She was supposed to be on some episodes back when I did Salon Talk with Tammy Holly and Janice Williams, my other girlfriends. Hey, girls. But when I fill you in on her bio, you'll understand why she wasn't able to make it. But I'm so honored that she was able to. So I met Angela through the marriage ministry at our church, Empowerment Temple. And right away, she felt like a sis, like that's your homegirl, like you've known her for a while. However, it's been in the last 2 years that we've gotten closer, and not just with her, but with her family, with her two beautiful daughters and with her husband, Darnell. And I'm definitely feel blessed to call them friends. Now, I do always tell her and her husband that Darnell is going to be the mayor. I always call him mayor, and that she's the first lady. However, this first lady is doing her thing too. So I don't know if y'all are ready for this. Take a breath, because what I'm about to lay on you, she does. She is probably busier than Michelle Obama. So not only did she form and heads up herself Phoenix Ministries at Empowerment Temple Church, which is a Christian-based nonprofit organization that provides a pathway to healing for women that are sexual assault survivors, she is also a fierce advocate for women, working hand in hand with the Baltimore State's Attorney's Office to encourage legislators in Annapolis to bring our predatory sexual assault laws in line with the federal statute. She is the creator and host of a podcast titled The Angela D. Wharton Show, which can be found on iTunes and SoundCloud. And I might be missing an avenue where else it's found, so I have her tell you that. And she's the author of the book titled Life After the Silence, From Pain to Power to Purpose. And y'all, she does all of this. Mind you, I watch her. She's always on the move. She does all of this while being a wife, a mom, a sister, a friend. She works with her husband. He's a very integral piece in the Baltimore ceasefire and bringing peace to our city. And she works alongside of him on top of doing her own things. So, like I said, I'm honored to call her a sister and a friend. Quite frankly, I'm not sure how she manages it all in 24 hours. And she always stays camera ready. And her nails. I'm looking at mine. I just told Corey, and I texted my girlfriend. I'm 40. We get ready to go into a new year. I'm too grown to not have a manicure, period. And that's my fault. So, yeah. So I'm just like balling my hands up because I talk with my hands, and I'm looking at her sparklies. I'm like, yeah, I'm going tomorrow off to church to get my nails done. So, but I'm super proud of my sis. Let me introduce you. And she can pray, y'all, because I've been a part of her prayers. Miss Angela D. Denise Wharton.
Oh my gosh, how amazing was that intro? I'm over here like,
she was trying to hold
in my laugh. Like, wait a minute. First of all, is she talking about me? Well, yeah, I do. Well, yeah, she's right. I did. Yeah.
And
I
you don't that. Even think about it.
Yeah, because we just keep going. Yep. We just do it and we keep it moving.
And you look good doing it too. Well, that's the thing. You always come Like,
thank you, girl.
See, I have days. So, like, oh, right. It's marriage ministry. Yeah, I'm going to be fly.
Right.
Oh, me and Corey going on a date. Oh, I'm fly right. for church. He normally sees yoga pants, tights.
Uh-huh.
My brother just bought, and his girlfriend, hey, Ray Ham just brought me this sweater for Christmas.
I love it.
Hold on. Wait, y'all, Mr. Uh-oh. Hood. Uh-oh.
She done put the hood on, y'all.
Y'all, this is going to be my outfit for when I'm dressed up and dressed down.
Fabulous with the hood. Yes.
But you know how they say we need to give our flowers while you're a living, and you definitely do a lot, and you are an inspiration to other women. Like I said, I see you going at the church, and we'll get into what your ministry is. But I mean, here you have a family, a life, you formed a ministry, you speak all over. And I can't wait till I'm able to introduce you, because I'm putting it on record, y'all. When she's speaking at Essence Fest and all these big platforms and TD Jakes Church, and she's speaking on TBN, and she needs somebody to introduce her. Sorry, Darnell, but it will be me. Okay.
Come on here. Okay. I receive that.
Mr. First Lady. Let me
say Mr. First Lady. Mr. Angela D. Wharton.
Mr. Angela D. Wharton. Stand up. And I want you to do this. Stand up, baby. Let them see you.
Stand up, baby. Let them see you. Wave to the crowd, baby.
Wave to the crowd, baby. Yeah, he do his thing, but Angela may end up being the mayor. How about that?
Well.
But on a serious note, y'all heard everything that she does. And if you couldn't tell by the intro, a lot of focus is on the women sexual assault survivors. And it just dawned on me today, and I didn't even get to share it with Angela, that what a perfect time. God knew when it was time for her to come on. What a perfect time when you have the Me Too campaign.
Absolutely.
You have all this coming out. What were your initial, like, everything's coming out, boom, this person, boom, that person, Harvey Weinstein and all these women that were afraid to speak up and now are coming forth. When you first heard this, what was your first initial reaction? Because if you guys don't know, Angela is a survivor of sexual assault herself, and she's thriving. So what was your first reaction hearing all this?
Well, before I even answer the question, I have to say I am so honored to be able to finally be on the podcast. Yes, we've been planning this for quite some time. And you're right. Everything is done in God's perfect timing. Mm-hmm. I wasn't supposed to be on back then.
No.
Because all of this didn't come out in the news just yet.
Yep.
Not the way that it is now. Mm-hmm. So this was a time when God wanted me to be here.
Yes. And so, people are open to now having conversation.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for having your podcast and being so consistent with it.
Thank you.
It's really been a blessing to me, because I do listen. It's been a blessing to me, and I know it's blessing so many other people
Thank you.
Back to your question.
I'm going to need that scarf when you leave too, y'all. She's sitting up here with this scarf on. I'm looking like that. It's cute, and it matches her nails. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, okay. All right. So when I initially heard the news mentioning, Harvey Weinstein and the 45 and, all the other events that are coming out in terms of sexual assault, sexual harassment, I cringed at first because I am a survivor. Mm-hmm. So I have a heart for survivors.
Okay.
You know, I know what they are going through. So it was first the cringing.
Okay.
Then it was the anger.
Okay. So you felt the same feelings as if it was you. Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It was the cringing and it was the anger. And then it was more of, I'm glad they're speaking out.
Okay.
You know, sexual assault happens every 2 minutes.
Wow.
In the United States. That's a statistic from RAINN.org, RAINN.org. And I know that it happens so often, and oftentimes people don't think that it does happen. So I'm not surprised when I hear these stories. I am happy that a light is being shown on the darkness of sexual assault. But I'm just really happy that people are being or feeling empowered enough to speak up and speak out.
Okay.
So I went through the whole gamut of emotions.
Okay.
When I first started hearing about all of the news that's coming out about sexual assault, and it kind of took me to a place where I guess you could say that I was triggered as well.
Wow. Okay.
And for those who are not familiar with what a trigger is a reminder. So if you are a survivor of any kind of trauma, whether it's sexual or an accident, whatever the trauma is, certain things will remind you of that situation that you were in. And we call those triggers.
Okay.
So I was triggered by that. So it kind of took me back to me being assaulted, which in terms takes me through that whole gamut of emotions.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But I'm in a place of healing now where I can actually do self-care.
Okay. Okay.
Do self-care. Okay. And for me, self-care is meditation. It's journaling.
But when you say meditate, can you break that down? Because I've heard so many people talk about meditation, and sometimes you wonder, is it sitting silently? Like, so are there different forms? So when you say medication, what's your meditation? What's your form of meditation?
My form of meditation is prayer first.
Okay.
Because I have to go to God and ask him to please take this away from me.
Okay.
Whether it's the anger that I'm feeling, whether it's the feeling of the heaviness, the sadness that I'm feeling.
Okay.
I have to ask God to take this away from me. You know, give me your peace surrounding this.
Okay.
So after prayer, I just sit in silence.
Okay.
With the Lord. Just sit. I don't ask any questions. I don't say anything. I don't pray. Because the prayer portion is done. I've already prayed.
So it's not so even you're stressing to let me hear something. You're just sitting in your prayer. Okay.
I just sit. And it's relaxing. And I breathe. I do like a breathing exercise, you know, in and out. Inhale, exhale, inhale, exhale. And it really helps to relax me and helps to calm my anxiety around, you know, the triggers.
Okay. Because I never even thought about, you saying it made you angry or you cringe, but I never really thought about it taking you through every single emotion as if it's you. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because, like I said, Angela's going to tell her backstory, but I'm going to jump ahead a little bit because I was saddened by some of the Facebook comments I was seeing, like, why did they wait so long? It can't still be bothering them. Why would they not speak up? And I was sad, and then I was angry. Yes. And I'm like, here you are talking about it. It happened to you how many years ago?
21.
So you can still be triggered by it.
Well, that was the last one.
Okay.
So I was initially sexually assaulted by my mom's boyfriend at the age of 14.
Okay.
And then again, I was actually raped at gunpoint in the woods in 1996.
Okay.
So we're on 21 years of surviving that one.
And to hear you, and even to see you, to feel how passionate you are, so passionate that God has used you to create putting a global ministry, because they don't talk about it in church. And so to know someone that's been through it, and then to see these comments, like, how can it still affect you when you have adults that claim they weren't hugged enough as a child, so they justify their behavior now, but to dismiss the sexual assault was staggering to me. And I couldn't believe how many women were so quick to say, why did they wait? Why did they wait? And I was having a conversation at Christmas, and Ma had said, well, you know, to go back 30 years. And I said, I don't know, because part of me was like, okay, I can kind of see what you're saying. But the other part of me, I said, imagine, have you ever known somebody was doing something that wasn't good and you wanted to speak up, but you didn't? But then somebody else noticed it and had the courage to speak up. So you're like, you know what? That person needs to be dealt with. So I need to speak up too, to make that person's statement valid. It's the same thing. Women are being given power to speak up now, so that one woman is just not standing out there alone. And they don't see it that way. So how did that make you feel? Because I'm sure you've seen it too. Like, was that a trigger for you also?
I did see some, not so many Facebook comments, but I do hear conversations that people are having surrounding that. Even on TV, some of the clips, the news clips and that sort of thing, there were negative comments. But to answer that question, for those who don't understand, or for those who are asking the question, well, why she wait so long? Well, why didn't she say something, you know, when it happened? It's been 20 years. It's been 30 years. That's this is the exact reason why survivors are afraid to say anything, because we become re-victimized. You know, when people don't believe us, when people shame us, when people blame us, and I say us because I am a survivor. It takes a tremendous amount of courage to tell someone that you've been raped, to tell someone that you've been molested, to tell someone that someone sexually harassed you. It takes a tremendous amount of courage to do that. And then for you to do it, and then for someone to turn around and say, oh, well, why you wear that black dress? Well, why did you go over there? Well, why did you do this? Why did you do that? Well, it doesn't matter what someone wore. It doesn't matter what someone did or did not do. If I don't give you the permission to touch me there, if I don't give you the permission to enter me, that is rape. That is sexual assault. You know, if I don't give you the permission, sexual assault is any non-consensual sexual contact.
And that includes the touches.
That's all sexual assault. Now, it turns into rape when it's penetration involved. That's when it turns into rape.
But I like how, can you say that meaning again? Because I think so many people, I actually even heard someone try to classify, I could see if it was rape, but it was just assault. So can you say that meaning again as far as sexual assault?
Yes. So sexual assault is any non-consensual sexual contact.
Period.
Period. That's a grab on the breast, a touch on the behind, whatever. If anybody touches you in a sexual way and you did not give them permission to do so, that is sexual assault. And it's classified as rape when there's penetration, whether with an object, whether with your finger, whether with your penis, whatever.
Wow.
Then it becomes rape.
And you just kind of really, I've felt like with the assault thing and like so disappointed, but you breaking it down like that even further is like, as a society and as a culture, because I started thinking back, I used to work in an all men's clothing store, which is where I met Corey. And during the week, he would be like, oh, wear your sweatpants or wear your jeans. But during the weekend, basically sex it up a little to get commission. And I will never forget, I had on a halter dress and this guy kept trying to ask me out. And I'm like ignoring him. And he walked by and he untied the top of my dress. And thank God I caught it. And I mean, you're talking a store full of people, a store full of men. Then women would come in and be upset because somebody wants you to look that way to bring the store money. And all he did was say to the guy, yo, you can't do that in here. Never told him he couldn't come back because he would spend money. But I'm like, the fact that he thought that was okay. And even in my state, I should have raised more of a flag for that interview, raised more of a ruckus for the interview for that job. I think society has a way of making women feel, especially if you already are trying to build your self-esteem. That particular store had one black girl. I mean, at the time had no black girls, had an Italian girl, had a blonde. So the way I was approached by the job was, you're a pretty black girl, come meet my boss. Okay, that was by another woman. So I thought, okay, I go to meet him and he says in the interview, yep, you'll get harassed. The guys will probably harass you, but that just comes along with it. And I'm thinking now, I was so conditioned even at 20-something to be like, oh, okay, in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, I can just brush it off. But he said that in the interview. So society has made it okay to be harassed. Yes. And like you said, if you speak out on it, unless it's penetration, it's not supposed to affect you.
It does. Mm-hmm. Any kind of non-consensual sexual contact, it does. You remember that like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. And how many years ago was that?
Man, it's been 18.
So oftentimes that can be considered trauma. Mm-hmm. You were traumatized. Right. You remember that. Most of us remember being traumatized, no matter how many years ago it's been.
You're right.
It doesn't matter. And for society, I mean, sexual assault, rape. I mean, women have been treated like second-class citizens for years.
Mm-hmm. For years.
And especially in other countries, women are not respected at all. We're looked upon as sexual objects. Mm-hmm. So for us here in the States now, and for the light to be shown on sexual assault, sexual harassment, I am so grateful for that, but we have such a long way to go.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really happy that so many survivors are being empowered to speak up and speak out, because that empowers others. Mm-hmm. That is the exact reason why when you see one person come out,
okay,
the floodgates open.
Okay.
Because they're like, oh, well, I wasn't the only one. And that empowers others to speak up and speak out, because they're like, okay, well, I have partners. I'm not alone.
And I'm not
by myself. So I can do this if I feel supported. But wow. if you don't feel supported, oftentimes you remain in that quiet space and that alone space, and you hold on to it because you don't want to be embarrassed. Oftentimes we are embarrassed. We blame ourselves. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, maybe I should have fought back. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe I shouldn't have gone over there. But it doesn't
maybe
matter.
I shouldn't have had on that dress or that
Or maybe I shouldn't have wore that purple nail polish. Mm-hmm. You know, something right. as simple as that. We look for ways to blame ourselves, and we just hold on to it until we get to that point where we just cannot hold it any longer.
Okay.
And it may take 10 years. It may take 20 years.
Okay.
You know, but a survivor will get to the point where she's just been trying to suppress it for so long, and she just cannot anymore.
And I like how that's, so not to cut you off, but that's why I love uh-huh. the title of your book, Life After the silence.
From pain, because it must come from purpose.
Eventually you can't hold it.
You can't. And in suppressing it, it turns into other things.
Okay.
It turns into the depression.
Okay.
It turns into the suicide, you know, suicidal thoughts, suicidal attempts. It turns into the low self-esteem, promiscuity,
and that's okay.
drug abuse, alcoholism, okay. because wow. we're trying to self-medicate. That emotional pain becomes so overwhelming that we have to do something to try to take the pain away.
To try to get
away,
it out. Okay.
To try to take the pain away. Now, everybody doesn't do all those things that I listed, but oftentimes we do.
Okay.
We do. You know, that's why sometimes you hear that survivors commit suicide because they just cannot make the pain away. And I'll tell you this story from my experience. When I was going through my recovery phase from the rape, I'm not one for pain.
Okay. So you weren't going to, okay.
I wasn't going to, you know,
cut yourself. Like, okay.
I'm going to be real. I'm not one for pain. But for at least maybe a week or so, I would lay down and go to bed at night.
Okay.
But before I would go to bed, I would say, okay, God, I don't want to live anymore. I don't want to be here anymore. So I'm going to go to sleep right now. Mm. And I pray that you don't wake me up tomorrow. I don't want to be here. Do not let me wake up in the morning. Okay. Okay, God, I'm going to sleep now.
Wow.
And I wake up the next day and I'm looking around like, I prayed to not be here anymore. Next night, same thing. Okay, God. All right. It's time to go to bed. I'm going to lay down now. I don't want to wake up. I do not want to wake up tomorrow. But guess what happened?
You woke up.
21 years later, I'm still here. See, God had a purpose for that pain.
Mm-hmm. Like your title.
He had a purpose for that pain. And for everyone who has ever experienced any kind of pain that has set you back and you felt like it has just shaken you to your core.
Okay.
There's purpose in that pain.
Wow.
But you have to get to a place of healing.
First. Now, can you take me back? Because you said it happened twice. So, and all this, again, guys, is in Angela's book. It's available on Amazon. I'm going to constantly remind you through this podcast, because even though I may not have experienced the rape and that, I can say that I've been sexually harassed and probably even assaulted to a certain degree and not really thought about it as assault. But so when I read your book, it didn't even just help me in those areas. It helped me in life. Your podcast, especially like when you interview Dr. Tama and just when you and Darnell, your first podcast, I took things away that even though I may not have been a survivor of this, I was a survivor of this trauma, or I know people who have been who may have gone through the same thing you did. And I knew how to have the conversation without feeling awkward. So guys, again, you have to get her book, and it's Life After the Silence, From Pain to Power to Purpose. And I believe you also have a journal that with it, correct?
Yes, I do. Okay. I created the journal to accompany the book because I was getting feedback from readers and they were saying that, oh, I loved your book, but it was bringing up things for me.
Okay. Okay.
And I didn't know what to do with these thoughts, these feelings. I didn't know what to do with them. So then God dropped in my spirit to create the Life After journal.
That was amazing.
Yeah. So I created the journal, which gives each reader journaling prompts, and it's okay. meant to take you from the negativity surrounding your thoughts and your feelings okay. into a positive place.
Okay.
So it's 15 days of journal prompts that help you get out like all the negative feelings that you have. Like, okay, I was angry today because.
Okay. You know,
I let someone steal my joy today because. And then we slowly move into 15 days of positive journal entries.
Okay.
So things like my past will no longer hold me hostage because.
Okay.
I am free today because.
And see how I mean about whether you have survived any type of trauma. You're, yeah. While your ministry, your global ministry as far as is sexual assault, it also helps in other areas mm-hmm. of your life because that X might not have happened, but Z happened. So now I can journal it and write it down. So yeah, I definitely appreciate you for your book. I read it and I was talking to Tammy and she said she had her feet up and she was reading. The kids were playing and she was just reading. And I felt the same way. I'm like, the book is going everywhere. Okay, I'm going to the bathroom. Okay,
right.
I'm going downstairs.
It's a page turner. Like, yeah, that's yes. what I've been told. It's a page turner.
It definitely is. It definitely is. And again, guys, it's available on Amazon, AMAZON. Don't act like y'all don't know about Amazon.
And it's also available on my website, which is angeladwharton.com.
angeladwharton.com. See, and man, I feel like I didn't know. Now I got to go sign up and make sure I'm supporting my friend, my girl, because again, she's going global. So, you know. So I want you to take me back to the beginning, like when it all first started, sure. How old you were, what happened, you know.
Sure. So I was 14 years old and my mom worked the 3 to 11 shift. So I spent a lot of time at home taking care of my younger brother. And so this particular night, my good girlfriend had just got finished dyeing my hair with cherry Kool-Aid.
I'm gonna need pictures because I had cherry Kool-Aid hair too. Okay.
It was like a mixture of grape and cherry. And I mean, it turned out really nice. And my mom's boyfriend at the time had called the house and I thought he was calling to talk to my mom.
Okay.
But I'm thinking, you know, my mom not here. So I'm on the phone talking to him. And he says that he needs to come down and have a conversation with me about how I could make a lot of money. And I was like, I don't know about that. He's like, well, I'll just come down and talk. And I was like, okay, well, okay. I hung up the phone. But immediately when I hung up the phone with him, I felt
okay
that something wasn't right.
Right. Okay.
You know, you have that gut feeling.
Yes. My grandmama says, always trust your first mind and like
yeah,
your stomach.
Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so I turned to my girlfriend. I was like, yo, don't leave me. I was like, something doesn't feel right about this.
Wow.
Don't leave me. She was like, yo, but I got to go. You know, I just got off a punishment from last week. Yes.
Right.
Well, I covered her yes. in that punishment.
Oh.
And yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
I was like, oh, man. All right. Okay. So she left. When she left. He came.
Okay.
And he wanted to talk to me about how I could make up to $500 a night. Yes. Talking to men over the phone about sex.
You're 14.
14. So being a phone sex operator at the age of 14, while my mom is basically working because she worked a 3 to 11 shift. So I would start, I guess, like around 8, 9 o'clock at night or something like that. I don't know. We didn't get that far, praise God.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. But I told him, you know, I did not want to do that. I was not interested in doing that. And he kept pushing and prodding and persuading me to do it. And he was throwing things in my face. Like, you know, I know you guys don't have food. I know your lights have been turned off. Your telephone has been turned off.
So trying to make you feel.
Mm-hmm. Don't you want to help your mom? You can help your mom this way. You can
wow.
help her with the bills. And I know you want to get your hair done, like I see the little young girls wearing the tilt hairstyle and wearing Jordache jeans. Like he threw all of that.
Emotional manipulation.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Threw it all up at me. And I was like, oh, well, if I can help my mind, then maybe. Okay. So then he says, good. All right, good. So now all I need is a sample of you. All I need is a sample of you to take back to my manager to be sure that you're a good fit for the position. So I'm like, wait, what? Sample? What do you mean sample? Well, we'll just go down to your room and we'll just have sex really quickly. No. He said, we'll just sleep together really quickly.
He meant like, how would he? Okay.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Now that I'm old, like now that I'm right, older, right, I get
but,
it.
But
like,
you didn't back then because you're just thinking, okay.
Yeah. Right. So I was like, no, sir, I don't want to do that. I'm like getting really scared. I'm like, I don't want to do that. No. He's pushing and persuading. And I said, okay. All right. Okay. So we go down to the basement to my room, get down to the basement. This man takes his clothes off and gets into my little twin size bed. And I'm standing on the side of the bed, like
shaking,
like holding on to my shirt, my clothes, like, oh my God, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. I don't. And then he's like, come on. He opens the covers. I was like, come on. He's like, come on. I promise you, I won't hurt you. So I get in the bed with all of my clothes on, shaking like a leaf. I get in with all my clothes on.
Oh my gosh.
He rolls over, rips my pants, and tries and proceeds to enter me, and I'm screaming, I'm kicking, I'm fighting. I'm like, no, get off of me. No, I don't want to do this. Get off of me. If you don't get off of me, I'm going to scream rape.
Wow.
This man jumps up and he looks at me and he says, how you going to scream rape when you let me in here? You let me down here to your room. You see, turned everything around
and your 14-year-old mind.
You did this. It's your fault. That's how I felt. But he jumped and he was like so angry. I didn't know what he was going to do. So I'm like shaking and I'm in bed shaking while he's like over top of me saying these things to me. And the doorbell rings. He's like, who is that? I'm like, I don't know. So I jump up out the bed, you know, grab my, you know, my clothes, get dressed as best that I can. And I run upstairs to answer the door. And it was a friend of mine. So by the time I get upstairs to answer the door to let my friend in, this man had put all his clothes on, came upstairs, and he's walking out the door as my friend is coming in. And he's like, okay, see you later.
Just like nothing just happened.
Like nothing ever happened. Nothing.
And I wonder how many at that point, how many other young ladies had he done that to? Because that was just too.
Yeah. Mm. And see, the thing is that statistics show that a predator will have assaulted up to 100 individuals before he's even caught. Yes. Mm. So there's never only one.
Like, oh, I didn't mean it. This is my first time it got carried away.
There's never only one. Mm. And then we fast forward. We fast forward 10 years.
But wait, now after, did you tell anyone
at that point? I told my girlfriend the next day.
The one that had dyed your hair.
Yep, as we walked to school, because we went to school together. And I was like, yo, you will not believe what happened last night. I asked you not to leave me.
Did she encourage you to tell your mom or anything? Or
Nope. I actually did try to tell my mom once. Because after that time, I spent a lot of time in my room in the basement.
Okay.
Like I fell in. Now I know that since I'm older, I was depressed as a 14-year-old trying to process this.
Right.
So I spent a lot of time just in my room. Lights off, TV on, but I couldn't tell you what was going on. Just in my room. And I remember coming out of the room one day to get some water. My mom was in the kitchen frying chicken or something. Okay. You know, black mamas do.
Yeah.
And I got some water out the fridge and I like turned around. I said, Mom, what have happened to Mr. So-and-so? He doesn't come around anymore. And she like swung around with a hand on her hip. What'd you say? I said, whatever happened to Mr. So-and-so? Because, you know, he doesn't come around anymore. What? And she said, well, child, I don't know what happened to him. I don't know. And then she kind of like swung back around and finished flipping chicken. Like, and I wanted so bad for her to say, why?
But it was almost like you wonder if she maybe had a clue. Do you think maybe she?
No. I don't. I think my mom was dealing with some other stuff.
Yeah, okay.
That's a whole nother show.
Okay, but she wanted her to give you permission.
Yeah,
almost.
I wanted that door to be open.
Okay.
And when it wasn't, I just grabbed my water and just went downstairs.
Wow.
And never told anyone. else.
So you had to deal with that.
Yep. Never told. In fact, I suppressed that one so long that it didn't come up again until one day we were in a Phoenix meeting at the church, and we had a therapist, because I would invite therapists to come to the meetings as well. We had a therapist come in. I forget what the topic was we were discussing that day, and I got triggered. And I remembered, oh, this did happen at 14.
So it was almost like you had the mind, and it's amazing and sort of scary how our body works. Your mind almost made you forget.
Almost. But those triggers are bringing it right back. Mm-hmm. And I asked the therapist, could I have a conversation with her afterwards? And she said, of course. So then after everybody left, she and I talked, and I said to her, like, I never told anyone, not even my mom. I mean, outside of my girlfriend, I said, right, not even my mom. She's like, you have got to tell your mother. But she said, this is what I want you to do. She said, I want you to write it out in a letter. Write everything that happened that night in a letter to your mom. Because if you sit down with her and you try to tell her, you're going to start crying.
Okay.
She gonna start crying. Oh. And you're not gonna get it all out. This is something that you have to get off of you. You have to get it out of your system.
And it had to be to your mom. Wow.
And it had to be to my mom. So I wrote my mom the letter, and she and I had to run some errands or something for my grandmother's 4th of July cookout or something. And I handed her the letter while we're driving to the grocery store or whatever we had to do. She read the letter and she's like reading it. And she's looking at me, she's like, but Denise. I was like, Mom, just finish reading it. And I'm just driving.
She calls you Denise? Okay.
She's like, but Denise, I didn't know. I was like, Mom, I know you didn't know, but just keep reading. Oh, because she wanted reading. To make
sure. Okay, okay.
She's like, I said, keep reading. So when she got done, she's just like, oh, baby, I'm sorry. Wow. I didn't know. I was working. I didn't know. I said, Mom, I know. I said, but Mom, look at me. I said, look how good God is. Mm. Because I'm healed. I'm delivered and I'm set free.
Wow.
And now God has allowed me to take that pain, turn it into my purpose, and now I'm helping to free others.
Wow.
She was like, thank you, God. Thank you, God. She just started, you know, praising and worshiping God. But I felt so much better getting that out and finally telling my mom.
But what's interesting to me is that sometimes we'll say, you'll feel like you're healed and you'll say, oh, I'm past it. But yet God still finds a way to show you, no, you're not.
Absolutely.
Because for it to come back up, he needed like that. It's amazing, but yet at the same time, almost scary. Like, but I was good. I was living life. I was survived the second one. Why would this come back up? That's amazing. Yeah. Okay. So now you fast forward. Well, you fast forward 10 years, but I do have to ask you this. Because he put into your head it was your fault. When the rape happened 10 years later, did you have a quick thought, this is my fault? And do you think maybe it stemmed from, or was that something totally separate?
I didn't feel that way because this was totally separate.
Okay.
The second one happened at the hands of a complete stranger outside who was probably stalking me because he waited for me at the apartment where I used to live.
Then you think he noticed you going in and out.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And noticed me going in and out alone.
Okay.
Yeah, alone.
Okay.
So, yeah. But I didn't kind of connect the two at all. Or I didn't feel like this one was my fault at all.
Okay, okay.
Because I was basically attacked.
Okay.
So as I was coming... Coming from getting my hair done.
I told y'all she stay fly. Look, nothing changed. You still stay fly.
Another one of my girlfriends had just did my hair. And I'd come home from her house. And it was a Friday night. It was the Friday before Thanksgiving of 1996.
And you lived alone?
I lived alone in an apartment in Northeast Baltimore. Okay. And I remember getting out of the car and just walking up the pathway to the apartment. It's very dark out there. There's a lot of trees and bushes in that area. And I was thinking, okay, I'm not going to go to the club tonight. So, okay, for everyone who's listening, I wasn't always safe, but I am now. Praise God. So I thought.
Wait a minute, y'all. And she's a dope beatboxer. Just had to throw that in there.
Here we go. So I'm walking up the pathway and I'm thinking like, okay, I'm going to go in here and write this paper. I have homework to do. I'm not going to go to the club. I'm just going to go and have a nice quiet night, get this work done. These are the things that are going through my head. So I'm not really paying attention to my surroundings.
Okay.
So as I approached the door, I went to grab the door to open it to go inside the apartment building.
Okay.
And then I see a man off to the left of me standing there, and he has a gun in his hand, and he's pulling the mask over his face. And then he says, "You know what this is. Give me your purse and turn around and walk that way." And I just got saved September of 1996.
Wow.
And this happened November 1996. So I immediately started to recite the Lord's Prayer.
Okay.
I was just like, oh, God, I need the Lord right now. And I gave him the purse.
Okay.
And he marched me around the back of the apartment building to a wooded area back there. And the whole time, like, he's walking behind me, he's like screaming and cussing and saying all these things to me. And I'm just praying the whole time, like, "Lord, you got to help me. If I ever needed you now, Lord, need you now." You know, I'm praying. So then we get to this one part where I guess this is where he wants to rape me. So we stop. And he walks around in front of me and he points the gun right to my forehead. Mm. And I start just praying, like pleading, like, "Sir, please don't kill me. Please don't kill me. I go to school. I have a good job. I go to church. Please don't kill me, sir. This will kill my mom." And I'm thinking he's just going to blow my head off.
So you were nowhere near thinking. Mm.
Hadn't dawned on me yet. I'm thinking, "Oh, we're in the woods. This man gonna blow my head off. I'm gonna be murdered out here in these woods. They're not gonna find my body for a few days when I don't show up for work." Like, all this is going through my mind. So then he's like, "Shut up." But that's not quite what he said.
Got you. I got it. Okay.
Yeah, that's not quite what he said.
Okay.
So I shut up. I did what he told me to do because I wanted to live.
You wanted to live.
I wanted to live. Because, you know, we have that sense when we're in trouble, that fight, flight, or freeze.
Fight, flight, or freeze. I never heard the freeze. Okay.
Yep. I froze.
Okay.
Because I wanted, for me, that was my survival instinct.
Oh, because you knew if you fought him. And it's funny, you hear so many people say, "That had that been me." But when you want to live.
And that was something that would really make me angry, because I got that from a lot of people.
Really?
I did.
They said it to you.
They said it to me. I would get that from family, friends. Okay. They would say, "Well, why didn't you kick him in the nuts? Why didn't you? If it was me, I would have blah, blah, blah." You don't know what you would do when you're in that situation.
And you have a gun to your forehead.
You have a gun to your head. You don't know.
Hmm.
So they, all of them could miss me with that, because you don't know unless you're actually in that situation. So I froze. I did exactly what he told me to do.
Okay.
So then I still didn't think that he was getting ready to rape me the next thing he said was, "Get down on your knees."
Okay.
So I got down on my knees.
Okay.
I'm like, "Oh God, he's going to execute me like they do in the movies. He's going to blow my head off while I'm on my knees. Jesus, please." I'm praying. Then he makes me perform on him with a gun to my head.
Wow.
I still didn't think
that he was
I was going to be violated. I never thought that. Not yet. Until the next thing he told me to do was take my clothes off. That's when I knew.
In the woods.
November. Whew. 20 degrees outside.
Wow.
So I didn't take all of my clothes off. I took one leg out of my shoe. Well, I took my left shoe off, one leg out of my pantyhose, my underwear, one leg out the left. And then he proceeded to rape me. I did everything he told me to do because I wanted to live. I did it.
Mm.
And then God visited me. I had a God moment in the woods.
Wow.
God showed up. So while this person is violating my body in the worst way, it was like God had taken my spirit out of my body and had taken it up with him. And I had an aerial view of everything that was happening to my body. It was like I could look down and
see everything.
Everything that was happening. The grass, the twigs, the trees, everything. I could see it.
Wow.
I could see it. And after he was done, I remember it was like God had, like, no, after he was done, he stood up right over top of me, and he said, "You bet not scream. You bet not go to the police. I know where you live. I know what kind of car you drive. I will find you and I will kill you." See, that tells me right there he was stalking me.
Right.
That tells me right there
he knew where you live, what you drove, everything. Mm-hmm. Wow.
"I will find you and I will kill you." And then he ran off. I'm still laying there. Right? And it was like God had popped my back into my body, and I was like, like I remember like coming to like a gasp. Wow. And then I remember saying to myself, "Niece." You know, my middle name is Denise.
So yes,
Denise. That's how I talk to myself. Niece.
Yeah, are you sure? Yeah.
"Niece, you still alive. You still here. You can get away. You can run. Run. Get yourself together and run." So I just put my shoe back on, put one leg back into my underwear and put my shoe back on. I didn't realize till later that I didn't put the pantyhose
back on.
So that was kind of hanging out. My shoe and my pants leg back on. But I ran. Mm. I ran back down the same pathway we came up. And I remember that I had my keys. I kind of slipped my keys in my coat pocket when I gave him my purse.
Okay.
Because I had my keys in my hands so I could unlock the door. Okay. But as I gave him my purse, I kind of quietly slipped my keys in my pocket. I don't know why. It was all God. See, God knew. God will always give you an escape. He will always give you a way out. And so I was able to get into the car and drive to safety. Now, I don't know.
Because he knew where you lived.
I had to get away from there. Right. So I drove from Sedonia, because this happened in Sedonia. So for any of your Baltimore listeners who are familiar with the area, I drove from Sedonia all the way down to Moffitt and Gay. Nonstop.
I know where that is because Gay is downtown, like right in the middle of downtown, right?
Not too far. Yeah, well, not that far down.
I mean, but like
Bel Air Road.
Yes,
like
okay.
Bel Air Road in like where all those streets meet right there. Okay. It's a gas station there, right there in that area. I drove nonstop. I don't remember seeing a red light, a stop sign, another car, a person, nothing. I drove straight to safety to a friend who drove me to my mom's house. Wow. And then I went to the hospital and started the safe exam. And then started
my recovery. So at that time, you spoke up immediately about it.
Yeah, but I didn't want to because he told me not to. Remember?
To.
He
yes.
said, "You better not scream. You better not go to the police. You better not tell nobody.
Or he would find you."
Yes, I did everything he asked me not to do, which then caused me to have psychological issues surrounding it because I moved into my mom's house.
Okay.
So in my mind, I'm thinking that he is on top of the apartment building across the street from my mom's house waiting to sniper me.
Wow.
So I made my mom keep her curtains drawn, keep the blinds drawn. I would stay in the middle of my mom's bed. I was afraid to get out of the bed to go into the bathroom because I felt like maybe he had like some kind of x-ray vision. I know it sounds really...
No, but I
yeah, wow. That he could see my movement. And that he would like sniper me.
Because he did the thing that he wanted to do. So why wouldn't he be able to do? Right. That would be, wow.
Right. Because I know he has guns. He has access to a gun. And that stuck with me for a long time. People would come and see me. I wouldn't walk people downstairs. Because they would come up to my mom's room.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't leave. They would come up to my mom's bedroom.
So you mean downstairs like in the house?
No. Nope. I would stay in my mom's room.
And how did she handle that during this? And your brother, a man, like how did they
my
all?
Brother, yeah. My mom, she still worked every day.
Okay.
But she would send people to see me. So she would send people to talk to me and to keep me company, to bring me lunch and stuff like that. Like she would make sure I was covered in that sense. But when she came home, she just gave me my space.
Okay. She knew you needed to. Yeah. Okay.
She just gave me my space. She spent a lot of time downstairs in the kitchen because her sisters would come over and keep her company.
Okay. You know,
They would come see me and then they would go sit with her.
Okay.
So they would come in and see both of us, like my aunts and everybody. But yeah, it was tough.
Man.
It was really tough. And it took me about 15 years. Now I can say that. It took me about 15 years to recover.
Hey guys. Wow. What an amazing information filled episode. And again, I am so grateful to Angela for sharing her testimony, you know, with the hopes of freeing others. Again, as I mentioned earlier, especially with everything that's going on now and the hashtag MeToo campaign, you know, we need more than just a hashtag. We've got to take action so that we can stop sexual predatory actions against our boys, our girls, our men, and our women of all shapes, all sizes, all colors, all ethnicities, all nationalities. And I know it was getting good, right, y'all? It was getting so good. But you're going to have to tune in next Monday for part two, which will be episode 44. Now, please go subscribe and rate the podcast by clicking on the fifth star. It takes less than 2 minutes, I promise you. And if you're feeling real generous, you can leave a comment also. It can be quick. You can say, great, it blessed me. Whatever you want to say if you're feeling generous. Now, you can do this by going to either iTunes, Blueberry, BluBrry, Stitcher, and Google Play Music, and typing in Tales from a Butterfly. The more ratings I get, the more visible the podcast is, which in turn will bring in more sponsors. And that can be really important to the podcast. Also, I know that I say that at the end of pretty much every podcast episode, but if you could please share the podcast episodes, it would be a huge help. Some of you have asked me what you can do to support the podcast. And the answer is to subscribe, to rate it, and to share, and share alike. Remember, sharing is caring. Share it on your social media sites. And with me, I share the podcast on my Tales from a Butterfly Facebook page and also from my personal page, Taria Walker Faison. And I share the Blueberry site. So if you click on it, it will then give you the option to subscribe on either iTunes, Android. You can also subscribe by typing in your email, and every week when a new episode comes out, well, it's supposed to be every week, but y'all know what I'm saying. Every time a new episode comes out, it'll come directly to your email. And speaking of social media, you can follow me on Twitter at TS Faison, on Instagram at TS Faison, and on Facebook at Tales from a Butterfly. And guys, remember, no matter what temptations you may face this week, no matter how many times you're tempted to follow the rules that your flesh wants you to follow, remember, God has a promise and a purpose for your life. So get down on your knees and lay out before God and cry out unto Him, and He will hold you up and fight the enemy on your behalf. I love you guys, and thanks for listening.